So we're back for our second and first real episode when it comes to pop culture and mental health and pop culture. We have Olivia here, who is going to be a part of our group, so I wanted you to be able to introduce yourself before we got started.
All right. Hi. I'm a little under the weather. But my name's Olivia, as you just said, and I also am in the clinical mental health program for counseling. Right now, getting my master's. I'll be graduating in May. So exciting. But such as you've heard the last episode, clinical mental health, always been interested in it, especially substance abuse population, veterans. So there's a lot of comorbidity diagnoses. So why not look at pop culture and the media, because the portrayal of it is always very interesting to look at it, whether it's accurate or it may be exaggerated in really diagnosing or really giving an analysis of that is great.
Awesome. And why don't we just have like everyone kind of remind everyone who we are. And I'm Adam Gregory, and I'm here.
I'm Tony.
I'm Anna.
And I'm Scott.
So today we're going to talk about Good Will Hunting. I'm kind of, I guess, co-leading this conversation. And, you know, I've actually not done this before, so I'm kind of curious to see where it's going to go. I have some ideas of some topics, but I want to leave it really open. That way we all have kind of the lead at some point and get to talk about what we think is important and what should be said. I guess just to give kind of a background on Good Will Hunting, it's about almost a decade old, I feel it's, or no, almost two decades old at this point, sorry. It was a film with Robin Williams and Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Minnie Driver, director Gus Van Sant. It was about a young man who was played by Matt Damon. His name, and I watched it last week. What is his name in it? Will. Sorry, I was thinking about Robin Williams' character. Will Hunting is his name. Robin Williams' character is named...
Sean.
Sean. Okay. Sean. There we go.
I don't know how they came to meet
Sean.
I love it.
And I think, just a little trivia that I got off of the Internet Movie Database, IMDb, that the name Good Will Hunting, I think they purchased that title from someone else that they knew, and that's all they started with, was just that title, but they really liked it.
Before they made the movie?
I think so.
Ah.
Yeah. I was wondering if it had some kind of double meaning to
Oh, double or triple, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's taking place in Boston, which is a big part of the movie, actually, with kind of the background and the family and the lifestyle of Boston. Will Hunting is a young man who I think was 20, turning 21 during the film.
Yeah.
Worked as a custodian at MIT, which is an incredibly prestigious university. And he is kind of secretly this genius. And it's slowly revealed that it is him that is solving these problems. And he has some issue with the law and ends up having to see a counselor or a therapist. They weren't really clear about whether each one was a psychologist or psychiatrist or whatnot, but eventually ends up working with Robin Williams' character, Sean. And it kind of goes from there into this like client-therapist relationship, and there's a lot of details in between that I guess we can kind of hash out here. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to touch base on just the background of it. I saw it years and years ago for the first time, and didn't even realize, I guess, kind of half of the appeal of it until I had rewatched it recently when we talked about this, and I just remembered like how amazing it was again, kind of watching it. So I guess I kind of wanted to get everyone's opinions on that part, because I'd forgotten just how incredible it really was, especially after losing Robin Williams not long ago to someone who also dealt with a mental health issue for most of his life. And he won an Academy Award for this movie, and so I guess I just wanted to kind of talk about what the movie means to everyone and just overall general opinions of it first.
Well, I think I've seen the movie prior to my first group counseling class, because we watched it in there. And I probably didn't know the name, but then when I watched it again, I was like, I feel like I've seen this, but I didn't know this was the name. And even the second, third time around watching it, it came to me similarly to a lot of the times, a lot of the males who I went to school with. Extremely smart. However, you know, the way they behaved with their friends or just interacting with others, you never knew. And so when we one time shared, like, I remember in high school talking about ACT scores and all these other things, very intellectual conversations, however, not really knowing or them even highlighting that about themselves, but just living their lives the way they were.
I love this movie. Partly because, like, I'm a really big Robin Williams fan, and I saw this, I think either late high school or, like, earlier when I was in undergrad, and I just remember, like, oh my god, I love this movie, because it was, some parts weren't really realistic, like, the whole, you know, like, choking scene, which I brought up last week, or, like, the incessant provoking to, like, push him over the edge. But I do like that they make it known that he is really, really smart, but he hides it. That's really common, like Olivia said, in our culture now, just because it's, like, it used to be so taboo to be, like, smart, and it was, like, cool wasn't smart, or, like, it wasn't cool to be smart. But I like the client counselor relationship, just because they can be very down to earth and very real with each other. And he also, as a counselor, like, Robin Williams' character says a lot about his life, which you don't really see portrayed in movies that much. It's kind of one-sided generally. Like, the client is talking, and then here the therapist or counselor or whoever will say, like, one really good line of wisdom, and then that's it. And then the person's life is changed, and the movie just is over. I mean, just a happy ending. But even though you know this ending is happy, it's kind of like a cliffhanger at the same time. They both learn from each other, which is what I really like about it. Because as a counselor, you're not just helping someone else. Like, I believe clients help you grow as well as a person.
It was definitely a process, so not like one session. Although there were some moments that were very pivotal in the movie. This is actually the first time that I watched this movie, and I'm surprised that I haven't seen it before. It was an amazing movie, and one of the things that I really appreciated about it was the personalities and the depth of character that we see in this movie, especially when interacting with each other. Because in the beginning of the movie, I was like, okay, so we have some archetypal type characters, but it wasn't until the movie really blossomed and revealed itself how many facets each character had. And even if one character seemed like, oh, this guy has everything together, and another character, oh, you know, he doesn't have everything together, there were so many dynamics that we saw that contributed to each person's, I guess, interaction with the world and with the other characters, and that's what I really appreciated.
Well, there's so much I could respond to for what's already been said. And I'm trying to decide which direction to follow up on. So I guess I'm going to put a placeholder for what you just said on about relationships among characters. And I want to touch on this idea of mutuality in counseling relationships, that although the primary focus is for working with clients and helping clients get what they want to get from counseling, but we benefit from that, the depth of that relationship that we form with our clients. And I think that we're greatly better people for that. Mm-hmm. So, and how that was portrayed in this film, I liked the setup with the original, so Jerry or Gerard or Dr. Lambeau, I've got IMDb right in front of me, so I've got a cheat sheet here. But he the first two professional helpers that he takes Will to, they're kind of BS. I mean, they're not real. And but they, you know, Anna, you mentioned, I think, archetypal characters, and I think that those first two helpers represent a lot of what we see in films related to professional helping. So someone who portrays themselves as this expert, but they're really just kind of full of it. And Will, as he is prone to do, he just calls them right out on it. Go ahead.
One thing, I partially agree with you. The one thing that I would like to address, though, is for some professions like this, for instance, for some psychiatrists or like other, I believe there was one professional in hypnotherapy.
Yes.
Some professions have a lot more structure and doctrine when, you know, administering their therapies. Unlike counselors who attend, depending on theory and approach, they tend to have a lot more leeway, I believe, in sessions. And that's not to say that psychologists or psychiatrists cannot be themselves. And I agree with you that some of the ones that he visited at first were fake or very structured, so he was not able to connect with them. But at the same time, it's important to understand what the profession entails in itself.
Sure.
And some of them may not have those freedoms within session to be themselves, or may believe it not appropriate to be themselves in session.
Yeah, and the field of professional counseling to a large degree was sort of hatched or initiated based on the work of Carl Rogers and then enveloping all of the other helping theories from the other helping professions. And what one thing that Rogers really emphasized was that change comes from the relationship itself. And I think that we really see that with the characters of Sean and Will, that it's from their ability to be authentic and true with each other. And that takes a little time, because Will tries to sabotage this relationship with Will, just like he successfully did with the previous two. But in this case, Sean sticks with him and doesn't abandon him, mm-hmm. which an abandonment seems to be part of what Will Hunting is seeking and yet rejecting intimate relationships with other people in this film.
I would like to comment on you and Anna's thoughts when you mentioned the mutuality in counseling. I thought of people and their views on helping professionals in general. Some people have said, oh, I've seen the counselor, I've seen the psychiatrist, I've went to the doctor. I haven't had too many people, being very new myself into counseling, and even friends and family say, I'm excited to get some help and admit what's going on with me.
Yeah.
So that in itself is very real and authentic to say, I've had this experience, I do not like it. And whether it was the structure or their own ideas of how it happened prior to, or even meeting them at their, where they are, they weren't ready for it at that moment. And the type of person that Sean was, at this point I've had this experience, and I see what you're doing, and I'm going to stick this out until it's time. And it's, like you said, he didn't walk away from it, and I think that that in itself depicted what it sometimes is. Someone, whether it's a mandated client saying, I'm coming here because I have to be here, so what are you going to do with this time now that we're here? Or it's someone that's coming and they're like, I'm not going to talk to you about anything really personal. Let's stay on the surface. And then all of a sudden, they're not realizing that they're growing further in depth than they had initially thought. And with Sean and Will, here's this defense mechanisms that we have. And some people will say this is a difficult client, but being... Well, I guess this kind of goes with the different theories, philosophies that everyone may have. If I personally believe in this narrative that someone has, I want your personal account, whatever my theory is, I don't want to impose that on you. it's not a part of me. I don't want to do harm. So in that definition alone, I'm trying to figure out where you are so we can better build our relationship and establish that rapport versus saying, I see what you're doing. I'm going to ignore that and still try to proceed with my own agenda. And I think we see that play out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also, I really, you know, I like the fact that I think Sean does come at it from this very counselor-specific point of view, looking at, you know, I know there's got to be some traumas here. I know that this person's trying to do this purposefully to push me away. I mean, aggressive role manipulation in a psychotherapeutic relationship is incredibly prevalent, especially with people with a background of any kind of abuse or someone with a personality disorder. It's something that we see quite often when it comes to that therapy relationship. And I think that he recognized it right off and actually brought attention to it in the one scene where he's saying, you know, you can read to me all these things that you have researched, but you don't know what this is like.
Yeah.
And then starting to gain that empathy role as well, trying to show that building of a relationship that early and kind of putting the relationship back where it should be into client and counselor versus some, because, you know, Will walked out of there with a lot of the power in that relationship and kind of putting it back into at least an equal, if not, you know, counselor-client relationship again.
That was one of my favorite scenes of the movie. Because it really makes you think, just like, as someone watching it, you're just like, wow, he's like, these writers are amazing, because that's really how it is. You can learn so much from books and researching on the internet, but there's a whole difference to actually experiencing it in person. And he kind of like broke Will's ego down to size, like brought him down to size, just because, yeah, you're really smart, but you haven't experienced life. And I think at that point, like, Will actually thought about it, and it seemed like, from my point of view, that he started to take him seriously. Because, like, you know how people are like, you can't BS a BSer. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah.
Because throughout the course of the movie, like, Sean will tell, like, Will all these, like, things that happen throughout his life and stuff. And it's kind of just like, he has lived his life to the fullest. So there's nothing you can really do or say that's going to, like, you know, make him think or feel any less. So... And I also like that Sean's character was, like, extremely confident in himself and in his practice. The other two, especially the one with that was doing the hypnosis, when he found out Will was kind of just, like, joking around and not taking it too seriously, it kind of seemed like his, like, the character's pride was a little damaged, so he didn't want to work with him anymore. And I think that what a couple of you were saying earlier about sticking with a client even though they try to, like, push you away, it really shows, like, how great, like, this type of counseling is. Like, not to say that psychiatry and stuff like that is bad, but that's why I really like talk therapy, because, like you said, the more you talk, the more in-depth you get with things you're saying. And I really valued that scene, because it was the start of, like, the gradual, like, I don't really know how to explain it, but how Will, like, started to evolve into, like, a better person, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, so the character who was doing the hypnosis did seem to personalize, and then the other character who seemed like a retired professor or something like that, he seemed to
was he the one with the book?
Yes.
Like he wrote a book, and
I think one of the things that Will was trying to do, like we mentioned, was to gain the upper hand and to be in power. And he, because he's good at reading people, he automatically could tell what would trigger the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his ways of dealing with other people is that kind of joking, but not cynical, but I guess pushing away, like abrasive type of personality, and that's kind of how he learned to deal with people and to gain that upper hand and to gain respect for himself, was by that abrasive, like, prodding or provoking personality. And when Sean did understand where that was coming from, and he would get provoked, but it took, you could see a lot of self-control within Sean when it was when he realized, like, it was almost like he would be aware of it, he would be aware that he was being provoked, and those emotions, you could tell he was feeling them, but he was like, well, I understand what's going on, so I'm not going to respond in that way. I will show you that I have real emotions, and that, yes, your words do provoke me, and they do, you know, hit certain strings. I'm human too, but I'm not going to play your game.
Mm-hmm. I think that was a good highlight of bringing awareness to Will about his metacognition and him being able to really be in the space, like, here and now, this is you, but also outside of this room, this is you. And so while other people give in to what you're doing, I recognize this is a defense mechanism, and how can we move past this and get to those things at the core? And so most of the people, it's too rough at the beginning, I'm gonna try a different door, or I'm just gonna slam the door. And he said, well, here's a door, what do you wanna do with it? So.
I also appreciated Sean's strategies for dealing with difficult clients. So I have at least two thoughts on that. One is the idea of resistance, and some counseling theories, and I would equate these primarily with the third or fourth force of counseling, like the postmodern multicultural theories and solution-focused counseling, that don't subscribe to the idea of resistance. That when somebody isn't conforming to what you're telling them to do as a helper, it's because they're honoring their own needs in the best way that they know how in that moment. And so Sean, knowing that, does not personalize. And I also appreciated his use of conflict mediation and resolution strategies that we learned in group counseling. Mm-hmm. And how, rather than just come right out and attack or challenge or confront, well, he would first acknowledge and validate where Will was coming from. And then he would be a little more assertive in what he did. And like one scene that I'm thinking of, in their first meeting, Will walks over to this painting that Sean has made, and he kind of tries to rip it apart. And then the next day, or the next time they meet, I think they're out on a park bench. And Sean says he actually stayed up all night thinking about it, and he was had a lot of thoughts provoked by Will's comments and did some self-examination.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he shared more than the other therapists, or what maybe even a typical therapist or depiction of what a therapist would sharing those past experiences, sharing like, hey, I was thinking about you outside of this 1 hour that we spend together. Also just little things like changing where they're going to meet, like you said, on the park bench, or ending a session early, and little things like that, I think really kind of, it took back a little bit of this, what his role was there, and showing that he still, one, cared about Will and thought about him outside of session and was willing to put in that work and effort, which Will had clearly never seen from other individuals before, outside of maybe his friends, which we get kind of that relationship there. But it kind of brought him back, I guess, into, I don't know, just the role of the counselor and the therapist, and not letting Will completely run the session or resisting as much. Because I think it helps that he was also court mandated to be there, because, you know, a resistant client is just not going to come back if they don't want to. But with the court mandating and kind of showing like, okay, you're going to resist, but look at what I can do. I can change this. I'm in control of this. Showing kind of your teeth And it could be a smile or a growl.
I mean, in a way, Sean's character is sending the message, all that I can do is be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
When I first saw this movie, I was like, I want to be that type of counselor.
Yeah.
I mean, not the physical, like, altercations part of it, but, like, the comfortable enough to share my life experiences without, you know, being unethical. And just being able to relate to my clients on whatever they're going through. And it was like the first movie I saw that I actually thought like that. I haven't seen a movie really where there was a counselor-client relationship where I really wanted to embody that counselor. Never wanted to be a fictional character. Okay, that was a lot, but yeah.
And when it comes to the physical, I mean, that's something you've brought up several times, so clearly had a really distinct message with you.
Because I'm in ethics right now, so that's, we're really learning, like, what you can and can't do, and it just surprises me so much that, like, it surprises me more so because I had never seen that happen, like, I mean, outside of, like, a drama, like Grey's Anatomy or something, but in a movie where there's like, this is a clear like professional in a professional setting and you're in his office and you provoke him to the point where like he starts to choke you and it's like no one outside the room heard it or they just didn't want to enter the room. And it was just like, it started off as a mental power struggle and then it got to be a physical power struggle. And I don't know, it was just really surprising. And I keep bringing it up because it's just like how, like, I mean, I know Will wouldn't say anything. Like, he wouldn't go and, like, call the cops or anything.
Yeah.
But
it sounds like most of the movie was so realistic to you that something this big jumping out just was such a jolt from the realism of this relationship. And,
yeah.
You know, ethically incorrect, clearly.
Yeah, that part just was one of the most unrealistic parts of the whole movie for me. Even, you know, the bar scene when he was talking to, like, the other kid from MIT, and even the scene where him and Minnie Driver's character, like, get into an argument, and they're kind of yelling at each other, but even those seemed really more realistic, even, and the park scene where they beat that guy up, unfortunately. That was even more realistic than Sean, like, choking the client, like, Sean choking Will.
You know, I also, it was a surprise for me when I saw that scene, but I didn't see it as much unrealistic as a display of Sean's humanity, because, well, one thing that I considered was this movie was made 20 years ago, and naturally the ethics were pretty much the same, but I have a feeling that they were not as strict or structured as they are in our current period in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, Sean tends to take his role as a counselor not necessarily loosely, but he's a lot more himself. And doesn't, like, for instance, with going with into the park or, you know, ending session early and stuff like that. I have a feeling that on court, yes, it is seen as he is doing official counseling, but the relationship that they create and the type of session, it's not as, like, formal as most counseling is. And I have a feeling that, yes, he did, like, mess up by doing this, like, act or the somewhat violence. But I think it shows that even a amazing counselor that is very natural, that is, has been doing this for 20 years, that has been teaching this, they have moments also where, you know, they just mess up. And I'm sure that he did not mean to hurt Will. I have a feeling that he wanted to assert his power, or not necessarily power, but just to not, like you said, knock him down a step, because what Will was saying was inappropriate. But I honestly don't think that the counselor meant Will harm, and even though at this day and age he would most likely be fired or get his license taken away, at that time and in that setting, it may have had different consequences.
I think they would have been the same. I feel like we could really talk for a couple hours about the choking scene. And so it's, on one hand, it seems like an anomaly, and so part of me wants to attribute it to Matt. This script was written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and they were not counselors. On the other hand, so on the downside, huge ethical violation. On the upside,
it's really good character development.
It is good character development. And when I was a high school teacher, one of the first things I learned was kids and people want to know where their boundaries are. And rather than running away like the other two helpers did with Will, Robin Williams, or Sean, is saying, this is where the limit is. You do not cross this line. And so he was setting a boundary in a way that at best involves poetic license, and at worst is a huge ethical violation.
It was really nice for Hollywood's sake.
It was a great scene.
It was, I know, and I really liked it. It's just, when you've been sitting in ethics for so many weeks, you're this is wrong.
And I think we also have to kind of look at it from the point of view of the character of Sean. Like, he's also grieving. He's going through a big loss in his life. And someone making those blatantly rude and inappropriate comments might trigger someone to do something like that.
Yeah, and he brings that up, like,
because he's real. He's a person. He's not just the therapist.
And you can tell how much he loved his wife, like, through, like, further scenes between them, especially when he's talking about the World Series game that he gave his ticket up for to sit in a bar with her. And I was like, my inner romantic was like, that is so adorable. So I understand that, you know, anybody can be pushed that far. And I agree with Anna about how, you know, you can be a really great counselor, but everybody does, like, slip up sometimes.
And I think we could sit here and talk for hours about hugging clients or any
physical contact. They hug at the end, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do.
And I mean, I've questioned that as well. Where are the lines with any kind of physical contact with the client?
I think the whole discussion on ethics and self-disclosure and things like that, part of it is, I noticed when we were in ethics, it's a bunch of, it depends.
Yes.
And so if we're on that subject of it depends, I know in my own counseling, I provide more disclosure than a lot of my colleagues. That's my preference. And it's not inappropriately, and I was taught get in, get out. But the fact that I'm even getting in to get out is more than a lot of other people. And I know that it's also a part of how I establish rapport, because it's on context with what's going on. And sometimes clients and others just relate better once they hear those types of things going on. And Sean actually admitting, this is what's going on. Here's what happened. I was bothered by this. That was a self-disclosure. Not only saying I was thinking about you, but this is what happened. And brings back to the fact that he's human too. This is not just you being in this relationship as my client, and you're human, but I'm human too, and we're working on this relationship together. So it's not just, oh, the client changes, but overall, we both change. And I think that's a part of that character development, that growth for the counselor, as well as the client. And once you see that transition in yourself, not saying this is transference, but this is growth. And that's why when you come to termination, you admit, you know, not only, you know, we're coming to this point, but I learned some things too. And you take a piece, and it's not just, oh, you know, you gave the client all this information. I always tell my clients, you did the work. And so it's just so, it's rewarding for them to look back on that and then to know, wow, I meant something to you as well, even more rewarding.
Yeah. Another thing I've noticed, like, on the side of ethics now that, you know, the confidentiality that Sean kept throughout the whole movie, no matter what, was really, like, he, even though he had this struggle going on with, what was the other character? The
Jerry?
Yeah, even though him and Jerry had this history and they have these, like, opposing views on what Will should do and how he should live his life, like, he never broke confidentiality and said anything to Jerry. They would talk about Will, but he would never say anything that they talked about in a session.
Yeah.
And neither one of them ever spoke on, like, the physical, like the choking or the hugging. So I found that really nice, too, that the media portrayed confidentiality, like, not being broken, unlike, you know, certain movies and TV shows where someone would come home and just tell their husband or wife what happened, and you're not really supposed to do that.
So I want to go back to, well, a combination of the self-disclosure. I'll start with that. So there was quite a bit of self-disclosure, and I'm, you know, wondering, you mentioned that you self-disclose with clients, mm-hmm. and so how does that function for you, and does that relate to how you think it functioned for Sean?
I think more so on a needs basis, like, there's different forms of self-disclosure. So if it's a here and now, what I'm thinking is one form. However, I'm trying to think about something that happened recently. There's a lot going on. So that alone, if it's been a really long day, sometimes I've known if my client says they're really tired, it's a lot going on, I was like, yeah, and it's only Wednesday. That's a brief self-disclosure, and I'll just share with them, like, that instance, the day, and I'll be like, wow, we have two more days. What are we going to do with that? So in that instance, it's on the same context. It's really brief, and it's get in, get out. And also leaving that up to them to take it and see where we're going to go with it. And when I say get in, get out, if there was ever a loss or things like that, and the client's talking about it, or being hurt, being able to, even if I don't mention the loss or the hurt, we all have been hurt, and being able to say, yeah, I remember that time I was sad, or I remember that feeling of being hurt and feeling alone, I know what that feels like. And you're not sharing with the client, like, everything where it takes it off of their session. And now they're trying to figure out, oh, I got to help you from crying. But I'm still here with you in this moment. And gosh, that got to be tough. Like, Carl Rogers does it great with Gloria. Like, that's got to be awful. Like, she's trying to be this perfect person. And then he's just making all these comments to say, I hear what you're saying. That's tough. Like, sometimes that helps the client realize, like, I'm telling you all these things and you're wanting me to keep going on, but tell me that this is tough to even say and you recognize it. And that can progress your session. That can help the client really say, you know, I'm glad I got it out, but man, it was so hard.
And I think like something like that's tough, which I would call an affiliative negative assessment of the difficulty of the process, is a way of displaying empathy and connecting with clients. I'm wondering about, Sean spent a lot of time talking about that scene regarding the Boston Red Sox, and rather than going to what for a Boston Red Sox fan is the ultimate pinnacle of a career as a Red Sox fan, giving that up to be with this woman who at the time was a stranger and then became his wife. Mm-hmm. Talking so much about his wife, including Robin Williams' improvised lines about his wife farting.
That was improvised?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just found that on looking at trivia. So I wonder how does it function to talk about your wife having died of cancer and how she farted a lot those times, and about this ultimate romantic sacrifice of giving up being at the ultimate game to find this woman. That was really emphasized. And I'm wondering how that functioned.
I mean, I guess I kind of thought about it in the way that Will had been not only like abandoned several times by any kind of adult figure in his life, but abused several times as well. So, I mean, his trust is just gone. He isn't trusting people. He has those friends again, which I think play a huge relationship. And we can see that he makes really good decisions when it comes to choosing friends that are going to be caring and whatnot, with the female relationship, at least until it got too close. He makes good decisions. But he hasn't really had that adult male, or I don't really know if they go far enough to show like a female role model. So I think all that self-disclosure, all that bringing up a personalization is really just kind of him trying to show like, I'm not going to walk away. I'm going to open up to you as much as I can and share all these things that maybe someone else should have with you, and kind of pull that fatherly role that Will has just never had before. These are the kind of things that you would hope like a father and son would have the conversations. Oh, when I met your mom kind of thing. And Will's never going to have that. So kind of being able to break down that wall a little bit and provide him something that he's never had before in a parental kind of relationship and role.
Yeah, definitely. And I think his self-disclosure actually plays a lot of functions throughout their relationship. I think it starts out, one of the things that he's trying to do is show Will that he's willing to be vulnerable, even if Will is not.
Modeling.
And being like, well, here's a part of me, and I know that you might be kind of a jerk and you might attack me, but I'm willing to trust you with this information.
I'm being vulnerable.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. Oh, sorry.
The other thing, though, one thing that he's also modeling is Will has, throughout his whole life, has relied on logic instead of emotion. And when Sean's character is like, look, the logical thing was to go to the game, obviously. We have tickets. This is the greatest thing ever. But I chose to do an illogical thing. And I think in that moment, it's not so much about Sean or his experience as much as it is about Will's, like, not understanding, but struggle with emotions and logic. And for Will to have that space to think about and challenge that, like, yo, why would you make that stupid decision? Mm-hmm. And then kind of work through that and be like, oh, there are certain things that logically may not seem to have as much value, but maybe more rewarding than an experience like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I started thinking about modeling when Adam was talking, and then you brought it up, you and Scott. And I was just thinking, in that instance of him being vulnerable and modeling the behavior of expressing emotions, not to generalize and say all males are like that, but to sit there and have someone, him not having a male figure in his life, and to sit there and have it being displayed for him and model is one step in itself. And then another part of that is not only Sean sharing, but now we have Will being able to say, have I ever had this moment? No. Have I ever been able or presented with this moment? If not, why? What didn't get it this far? What didn't I do? What didn't I say? And now he's hearing, oh, this doesn't make sense. Like, why would you do that? And all of this. And it's like, well, I did it for this reason. And now not only is he questioning Sean's reasoning, but oftentimes when someone says something you can't agree with, you put yourself in their shoes, and now you question yourself. And now you can question your own actions, and it's a part of change. And do I see this behavior as a problem? Nope, I'm gonna keep going. So when you start getting into that process, now we're, all right, now you're contemplating whether that was right or wrong. And now we're trying to figure out where are you at in this stage of change? Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I think it was a really good teaching moment for Sean, because right before that conversation, they were talking about Minnie Driver's character, and Will was disclosing, you know, that they went on a date, and then that's how they segue into the conversation about, you know, the World Series. And I think it was a really good teaching moment, because Sean knows that Will keeps people at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he has met this woman who, off subject, but she is really good at breaking down gender norms. I really like that about her character. He meets this woman and they're dating, and like Sean knows he's into her because he rings her up once or twice during their sessions, and he's teaching him or showing him that, you know, sometimes love is, sometimes, you know, you have to go for what you want and make the illogical choices for the one you love, because he knows that, you know, Will is on the fence about it. So I think he also talks about his wife so much to show Will that there is love out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that because you have experienced all this heartache and pain, that it can get better. That's, and towards the end, when he finally, you know, self-discloses that his dad also abused him, that was a really defining moment in their relationship, because Will can now look at Sean like, okay, he went through the same thing I went through, but he also got out, has a really good life, found love, and he's okay. And it's all, it, you know, it's going to be okay. So I think that the self-disclosure is really good on his part, and it helps, it helped Will work through stuff that he was going through outside. Like, he has his friends and everything, but he never had love. So just him disclosing these things to Will helped him not be so afraid. I mean, even though he still was, it was helping him, like, flirt with the idea of falling in love.
Drawing those parallels.
Yeah.
And I think that Sean does that in several times during the movie. When Will is struggling with something, I think he's really great in bringing examples or metaphors to illustrate something in a not life concept, like in a more metaphorical concept that is maybe easier to work through for Will.
Yeah, I want to know what you think, because you brought it up. And
well,
so.
Which part?
I mean, the disclosure and his wife and all those moments.
Well, I think that there is a lot of installation of hope, as well as sort of being human and humanizing self. The part that I'm focusing on right now, though, is the transference and counter-transference ideas. And so what goes around comes around, and going back to the choking scene, I wonder if that in another way functioned to replicate Will's childhood and how he had experienced violence from parental figures.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I think I noticed while I was watching was at the beginning, Sean refers to Will as sport, like, good job, sport. But that makes a transition, and he refers to him as son.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that symbolizes the pseudo-father-son relationship that they've both been able to benefit from. Yeah.
One thing that I think Tony brought it up that I actually didn't like was when Sean kind of came out with his own kind of abuse as a child and whatnot. Because at that point I was kind of like, ugh, this is a little too hokey for me. You know what I mean? Like, of course he was too. And it just kind of, I don't know, I guess it amplified this idea that, like, if I haven't been abused, then I can't understand what it's like to work with an abused client. Or if I'm not an addict, then I can't understand what it's like to work with an addict. Don't get me wrong, I've worked with clients who have asked personal questions like that almost trying to get to see, oh, you know, do you know what it's like to be addicted? Like, mm-hmm. and, you know, we all have our different answers for it. Or, you know, is it that important to you that your counselor has also been abused or addicted? But I just didn't like it because it just, I don't know. I feel like if I was, like, reading that script, I'd have been like, oh, and here's the scene where he's going to say, me too, you know what I mean? And it just kind of was too hokey for me and just a stereotype of this, like, counselor who's also gone through the exact situation their client has, and that's mm-hmm. the only reason. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Adam, I was thinking about what we had just talked about of him showing and disclosing so much. That if they would have put it immediately in the beginning to say, let's establish rapport, me too, that it probably would have served, like, or came off to me in a similar way. But I think at that time, it showed the growth, because he could have kept it to himself. But I think at some point, if I'm growing, I'll be honest with you and say, I too have been affected. But I showed you the love and care, which was, I want to say, priority over me just saying I had a similar past. And then coming full circle to say, you know, me too. But that whole feeling of, you know, just because you haven't done it, meaning you haven't been through the same things as your client, you can't help them. I think everything else needed to happen, and the way he did it was important, so we wouldn't get that feeling.
Yeah.
Especially those of us watching it and knowing we're in a helping profession and looking at it to not have that feeling overall.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree that it's better that it was at the end, absolutely. Yeah. I guess I just wouldn't have wanted it in there at all. I don't think it was a necessary part.
I was confused. I had to watch it. Like, the second or third time I watched it, I understood that he was, like, saying that he went through it too, because for whatever reason I thought that he was just assuming what, like, Will's parents or adoptive, I don't remember, were doing to him. But the part that I would say I didn't really like the most was when he just kept saying, it's okay, it's okay, and he gradually started walking closer to him. And I guess, like, I'm having an issue with this personal space thing between, like, a counselor and a client, because most of my issues stem from, like, how close they get to each other. And I don't know, maybe I think that was a little hokey where he just kept saying it.
A little?
A lot. I was, like, watching it, like, okay. And then it just, like, you say, oh, it's okay so many times, and then I just break down crying and, like, I'm so sorry, and then the next day I'm fine, or, like, next week I'm okay. Like, no, that would never. If I'm letting out all those years of pain, like, it's not gonna be some, like, cutesy, like, really, like, huggy mm-hmm. scene. It's gonna be, like, snot and, like.
And it would not have happened that early.
Not at all. It would have had to have been, like, almost a year into it. And, like, even though, you know, the seasons gradually change, it would have had to have been. He was just so angry for majority of the movie, and then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, I'm just gonna let it out. But then again, it's only like a 2.5 hour movie, so there's only so much you can, like, capture in a movie.
And I think the other thing is, a lot of the elements that they put into the movie are symbolic, so some of the elements may not be realistic in a true counseling setting, but they're put into the scene to make the watcher empathize or feel those emotions. So for instance, when I was watching that scene where he kept repeating that, it's not your fault, I felt uncomfortable. And I think a lot of us may be feeling uncomfortable, and it's parallel to the feeling that the protagonist has in that moment, where it's like, okay, why are you keep saying this? Like, this is uncomfortable, to that breaking point where it's like, oh, it went through. So I agree that scene was very strange and odd and not something that I would expect to happen in a session. Definitely the personal space may be construed as aggressive or threatening, but I think for the purposes of that scene,
yeah,
it's very symbolic.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I have mixed thoughts on it. So I'm more likely to push with clients and to stay there even in the discomfort. I mean, that my issues were the phrasing, that it was not stated in positive terms. It was in negative terms, what isn't rather than what is. And I liked the hug. I liked the joke about, well said, isn't this against ethics or something? It's like, only if you grab my ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's at least two more scenes I want to touch on. The first one is, so Chucky is Ben Affleck's character.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting to talk about
Yeah. that. And it seemed like the first two acts of the movie, which is the first two-thirds, that Will's social needs and intimacy needs were being met by this friend group.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Morgan, character played by Casey Affleck, Ben Affleck's brother. But it came to a point where Will thought he was living out his dream, which was to stay in South Boston with his friends, and then Chucky kind of confronted him on that. I was wondering if anybody remembers what he said.
He was basically like, if 50 years from now you're still living in Boston, like, I'll beat your ass or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, and every day I hope you won't be there.
Yeah,
when
every day I drive to your house, and the best part of my day is that 10 seconds between getting out of the car and getting to your door, because I hope that you won't answer. And I was like, that is literally the best friend you could ever have.
Yeah.
Because he kept it so real. Like, we know you're a genius. You know you're a genius. But you cannot be afraid and let your past hold you back from everything that you have to offer. And it was just like, I need a friend like that. They were really nice friends.
I thought that was a really powerful turning point. I think that did affect Will. And especially hearing it from Chucky, who in a way is the person he's most connected to in the world. And then, so that will segue to the end. And by the way, a lot of this film was improvised, including the scene we just talked about, the it's not your fault, it's not your fault. Robin Williams improvised that. And he also improvised the last line of the movie, which was, he stole my line. So what'd you think about the ending?
I kind of tear up all the time.
Yeah.
I get really emotional at happy endings, and I'm like, he's gonna go get the girl. And then Sean's gonna go traveling. And it just made me feel so good that they're both like, you can see the growth in both characters, and that they, you know, went their separate ways, and they, like, they helped each other, and they're both, you know, gonna have a happy ending, even though you don't know what happens.
Yeah. I think about, I think you always tell us that, you know, the role of casting is to,
trust the process.
No, not just in the process, the other thing where you counsel yourself or help yourself out of a job.
Oh, right.
So in that instance, you know, you get to this point and he didn't have anyone he can turn to and all these other things. And at the end, he's going after things that he wouldn't have. A relationship, starting a new journey, all these things have come. And also the relationship is ending. So you don't counsel yourself out of a job. But that's okay with you, and
that's your goal.
Moving forward.
Yeah, I always thought that was like an interesting part of counseling, is that like if we're actually good at our, like most professions are like, I'm going to get you to keep coming back, and ours is like, I'm going to get you to go out there and not have to come back.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful and beautiful, and it's also
sad.
We are a lonely group of people.
Have each other. I had another thought, though. I think that in itself made me think about, I think Tony, you had said, like, you know, nothing's going to happen that fast. And then I went through practicum, and there were some changes. And it would be totally unrelated to the previous session. There will be self-disclosures from the client, or just kind of like we're talking about things one moment,
And then all of a sudden, they make a connection from ways they've been acting or things we've been discussing, and they say, wait, you know, this is me. I've been doing this. And that, to me, was many pivotal moments. There were clients who came, you know, it's a part of an assignment, and then all of a sudden, it turns into, I'm coming to you because I see this now as something I need to deal with. And I had a client, it was an assignment, and then after that, you know, it became, let's get a few more sessions, and then I'm gonna go my way. And that was like, I think, being in a room with some people who have never had a termination, and I'm like, yeah, another termination coming up, but it's knowing that, you know, I think I counsel myself out of a job. Good. That is a great feeling. And I think of, like, brief solution-focused counseling. Like, brief is important because it's brief. And here it is. I'm in sessions, 4 sessions, 6 sessions, 8 sessions. Within those sessions, they've gotten what they needed, and they're ready to just, you know, continue on. And I think in that case, it didn't take 2 years with Shango, but it happened, and it's the potential. And I think the film highlighted a lot of things where we'll read about it, and it'll say, that's a gray area, or that's a completely unethical. And then in this instance, there were some cases where, yeah, it's unethical, while others, that was a gray area, and for Sean, that was okay for them.
Mm-hmm. For me, yeah, definitely, that was a feel-good ending. It was a little unrealistic for me, because it was so nicely wrapped, but I think the movie itself was just trying to show, like, this is a possibility. It is possible to feel better, feel inspired, and that ending scene where he doesn't actually get to the destination, but it's a journey that he's driving. He's going. Doesn't know where it's going to take him, but he's going. One thing that you mentioned, though, that struck me when I was watching the movie, though, was the lack of termination session. So, like, well, time's up. See ya. Like, that, I was like, what? No. No way. Like, that's it? And because... well, in our program and in some of our classes, one thing that we were taught or was the not necessarily wrapping things up, but making sure that the client is ready to go out into the world where that severing of the relationship is not going to impact them in a negative way. And so for me to see, like, oh, time's up. Gotta go, never gonna see you again, kind of thing, like, it sprung up on me, and I feel like it sprung up on the character, too. So, that was one thing that I had a question on about this movie.
Yeah, I had a question about the termination scene, too. Because, well, we haven't really talked too much about terminations in my classes, so, from my point of view, I thought it was just fine, like, oh, okay, it's over. I was assuming all the paperwork that Will had to complete was done, you know, in some part of the scene that was cut or whatever. But I did have a question because they talked about keeping in touch. And are you allowed to, like, write a counselor or a counselor write a client, like, after their sessions are over?
It depends.
Don't you agree?
In terms of social relationships with clients, I think that the ethics say something to the effect, the time frame has changed. It used to be 2.5 years. I think now it's 5. I'm not 100%.
It's definitely 5.
Okay, thank you. So that there has to be a gap of 5 years, and leading up to that 5-year gap, there can have been no discussion regarding a future relationship, social relationship. Having said that, though, among counselors I know, it is fairly common to kind of do follow-up mm-hmm. contact a year later, 6 months later, that is still framed within the professional relationship?
Well, I mean, this, their, like, relationship was kind of like a special case because they were both also tied to Jerry. Yeah, they were also tied to Jerry, and Jerry was the one that was pushing Will for this job. So Will kind of, you know, his last parting, you know, words to Sean were, you know, tell the professor, I'm sorry, I had to go see about a girl. So I understood that it was just a question because he did ask, like, oh, you know, can I still keep in touch with you? And Sean kind of like, well, you know, I'll be traveling, but I'll have an email. So he didn't really give a definitive answer, which kind of goes with the gray area part, mm-hmm. like, it depends. So I just wanted to ask.
I think also him saying, I'll be traveling, but I have an email. Also, we have documentation on what's been going on right now. So maybe not the most up-to-date aligned structure, but there is some form in the fact that he's saying, you know, I'll be traveling, but who knows what that conversation would be like if he did reach out. But it'll be there in the record, so.
In terms of how realistic the terminating and ending was, I'm going to say possibly realistic with reservations.
Mm-hmm. Well, only because I have been in a session before, and that's kind of how my last session went, like, minus the, like, super, like, familiarity. It was just like, okay, so you're graduating, and I'll be, you know, like, something about, like, if you wanted to restart your sessions, you know, something, a conversation about insurance, and then it was kind of just like, okay, have fun, good luck in college, and here's our office if you ever want to come back. So it was really short. It only took an hour.
I thought that within the film, within their final counseling session, they did briefly touch on some termination and closure issues. I mean, a little bit of, I mean, and by little, I mean maybe one sentence of processing what it was like to work together, and they had the hug, and it did seem like an appropriate time. Now, poetic license, this wasn't something that was discussed a few sessions ahead of time, which should have taken place. So Will should have been coming to that session knowing it was going to be the last session.
Surprised.
He's
like,
oh,
okay,
I'm
better.
You know, and my lingering question is, what are the filmmakers, which is largely Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and Gus Van Sant, what messages are they trying to convey, what meta messages about mental illness or mental health issues and about professional helping?
Like the movie as a whole?
Yeah. So a couple of things I'm thinking that relate to the realisticness. I think that Will's character throughout, if you were kind of rooting for him, despite his drawbacks and setbacks and characteristics, that he was able to overcome them, he was able to go past these barriers and potentially reach his potential. We don't know that because it is a journey left on the road. You know, what would I predict? I don't predict that it's going to be all smiles and wedding cake. I think that Will still has these demons and issues, demons, if you will. I think that we're given the idea that overall he's going to be on a successful path with these, still with these issues that he's just recently started to work through, and so there is a healing process. And so one of the messages I receive from the film is hope.
I would add Scott planting the seed, because not everything that happens in a counseling session you actually see. So the work they started Sean may not know what happens, but he planted the seed, so hopefully if he needs to see someone else or he does the work on his own, they work through and started the process to discuss some coping and, you know, actually admitting the emotions and, you know, letting down those defense mechanisms of thinking logically and I can outsmart you, haha, and getting him to a point to say, okay, you know, maybe trying to BS my way through everything isn't the best choice for me because I don't help myself in that situation.
I would agree. The message is hope, absolutely. And that I think as counselors or future counselors, we take a little bit more from it and the idea that, like, well, it's not over. Like, there's still more of a journey for him in having healthy relationships and where he's going to end up in the future. And this is the beginning part of his process, and we recognize that. I think if my father would have watched it or my grandma watched it, they would walk out thinking, like, it's fixed and he's done and Robin Williams is good at this job, you know? You know what I mean? I think that we see it that way because we also have some experience with it.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, I think, is hope as a counselor, a counselor in training, and as a layman person on the street watching it would also say hope. We just see it in a different stage of change.
Yeah, Adam, I would say we also see it with the more clinical, and I say clinical loosely just to say we use different terms and vocabulary. While whether it's installation of hope or further change and planting seeds, typically watching a movie and saying it's done, maybe they will say, all right, he should apply that to the next thing. Didn't you just learn? Didn't they do a good job? I think me personally, coming especially into this program, I was like, oh, that's what I've been doing, or that's what's been going on, and thinking of things in a different way. I think it's building upon a schema that I've known, but now you have different words and terminology to use. And so now it's also just informing people, like if you explain, like, oh, that's some cognitive dissonance, and they're like, I've never done that. Well, actually, you do it all the time. And now you're getting, providing some psychoeducation. And so I think in that instance, whether you're a person in the helping profession or someone else, that's what I know. Typically, when I watch movies and talk to people, they're like, I don't do that. And then you provide the psychoeducation or you have a session and they're like, I have been doing that, and you just didn't know what to call it because you do it. And typically, we talked about it in my internship at the drug court. We talked about a lot of CBT. So in that instance, a lot of them will say, I acted, and there were no thoughts, but there was a thought, then you acted, and really getting them to break it down.
The emotion.
Mm-hmm. So, I just don't think I always knew the terms then.
Any final thoughts?
Great reading.
I try to keep my comments more like counseling centered because I had a whole list of I like to analyze different characters, so I kind of broke down every character.
Oh, interesting.
I thought the same thing, though. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah. We'll do that later.
I have a paper I could write then.
Okay. So, I'm going to have a little bit of end of podcast housekeeping, and then we'll let you have the last word. So next week, we'll be talking about ordinary people. And I'll lead the discussion on that. The week after that, we'll have Antoine Fisher. And I was wondering if one of you would like to lead the discussion.
I don't know where my life will be by next week. It's all over the place right now.
Well, We can revisit. I think the hope is kind of for Adam and I to do the first two, and then throughout the course of the semester, each of us to lead two, mm-hmm. and there's five of us, so that'll be 10.
Yeah, and you can see, like, today I had notes or whatnot and kind of general ideas, but it took a completely different path than, you know, I like the openness of it, so don't feel like it's too much pressure to take on the lead for it.
What I always say about my teaching is I've got lots of stuff planned, but if something else happens, that's even better. Mm-hmm. So additional movies coming up, Girl Interrupted.
We have a list of this.
Yeah, we do, and we'll make sure to send them out again. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll do Ordinary People. I'll lead that next week, and let's make decisions then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll have a complete list.
Sure.
So,
I guess thank you. I was really excited to be a part of this one, especially to kind of guide where the conversation was going to go, because this is one of my favorites. I love and miss Robin Williams, and I think we all kind of agreed on that when we talked beforehand. So, thank you guys for being a part of it. Thanks to anyone who may be listening, and I'm really excited to go with Ordinary People next week.
Likewise.
I've never seen it. This will be fun.
It's fantastic.
Bye. All right.